trust yourself. Know that you will not necessarily appeal to everyone, but as long as you believe that the work that you're doing is important for you, it will make sense later to others. If it makes sense to you, it doesn't have to make sense to other people. You are a unique human being. There has never been anyone like you. And therefore, the very fact that you are unique in this world means that you also have unique perspectives.
Hello, everyone. My name is Masha Tissa, and you're listening to the Creative World Podcast, a podcast that helps you get to your full creative potential. I'd like to mention a quote I met the other day that says, in life, you're either offending or you're either representing. Don't be a spectator. And what stood out for me there is the whole spectator bit. Because to be honest, just to add on to this quote, sometimes you find a lot of the times we are passive participants of our lives. We are not active. You know, we just wait for things to be done. We cannot be the ones to initiate a change we'd like to see. We are just waiting for whatever other people are going to do is what is going to happen. And so we don't take any initiative to do anything because we feel maybe it's someone else's responsibility to do certain things. And I'm not even judging, but my encouragement is just like, we shouldn't just wait and sit and wait for other people to make a change. We can also be the ones to initiate a change. I am so excited about today's conversation. So we have curated amazing people that we'd want to introduce you to. Or rather, if you've not known about them, you can go stalk them and just learn what it is they're doing. And maybe you can be inspired to do something in your own way. Today's story is one that has really inspired me. Our guest today is called Tayana Chao. She's famously known as the Headstrong Historian. And if you go look at her website and everything about what she does, I know you'll be inspired. And especially we've been chatting about her beginning, how she started. Just in brief, just get to know about who Tayana was. And I know when you listen to this story, you'll really get inspired and you'll choose to do something about what it is you're seeing around you. I hope you're going to enjoy those episodes. And a special mention to Midundo Online Media, that is your online radio station that is keen on helping promoting East African conscious music. So without wasting much time, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you to the Creative Bal Podcast.
Our guest today is called Tayana Chao, and she's going to be telling us a little more about how we're going to be learning about the amazing work that she does. And I know a lot of us are going to be inspired by her work. Welcome so much to the podcast, Tayana.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Okay. The reason why I actually really wanted to have you in the podcast is because I'm really inspired by the kind of work you do. And I feel like it's something that a lot of creative people should really emulate and just learn from your story. So we'll just start off with introductions, because I know we've mentioned your name and maybe there's someone who doesn't know you. Who is Tayana?
Okay, so who is Tayana? She is a storyteller, a lover of history, a lover of technology, and at the core of it, you know, just like an African woman who really believes in her identity and the identity of her people, and who is trying to find ways to preserve this, to communicate it, to disseminate it amongst both my peers, and, you know, in as much as, you know, we always focus on future generations, but I think sometimes you need to really focus on ourselves, our generation.
Okay, so you've mentioned about your interest about conserving history and everything else. I just want to know, have you always been a historian? Is this something you've, because these are not things you hear a lot of people really interested in it. So have you always been a historian, and what really made you have this burden to preserve our history?
Yeah. I don't know, is it a burden?
Yes,
it's a blessing. So, wait, let's start with, have I always been a historian? I say always. I consider myself a historian by passion and a computer scientist by profession. Mm-hmm. And my passion came first. I was always very interested in history. I grew up in like the same compound or vicinity with my grandparents my whole life. And so this really informed my curiosities as to kind of history and culture, and my grandparents and my mom as well being very proud of who they are. So in our house, we'd always have like artifacts and beads and shangas. And, you know, it was just a normal part of my life that
you know, I was always surrounded by cultural and historical elements. And I think the older I got and also starting to kind of venture into being a computer scientist, I realized that there's so much to be done within the historical space. And it's very hard to find the tools to do it. The barriers of entry are very high because we think, you know, if you're not from the museum or you don't work in the archives, then you don't qualify as a historian. And I think it's such a pity because history, heritage, I say history and heritage being history like the past, but heritage being something we kind of embody in our lives. History, heritage, and culture, it's not just about who we were, it's who we are now. So it doesn't matter if you're an engineer, if you're a mechanic, if you're a teacher, if you're a nurse, you have a history and you have a heritage, but it's something that is treated as if that's the job for other people to do, you know. Obviously, this is a byproduct kind of like of the colonial encounter in which Europeans and white people come here and say that they are the ones who are going to dictate our history. And because we have, you know, all these excuses and kind of biases that we've inherited, we feel that, you know, maybe history is not so important. But I think for me, it's a fundamental thing for society. It's a fundamental thing for countries. It's a fundamental thing for individuals, you know, to really be strongly rooted in an understanding of who you are. And that understanding should not be from someone else's perspective, because they determine how you feel, how you move around the world, and how you think about yourself. And, you know, so it's such a crucial point that I think it should be everyone's job to kind of interrogate and investigate their own history.
I love what you say, that it's everyone's job to interrogate and just investigate their own history. And lately, it's something that has been in my mind of late, because even as a filmmaker and an animator, a lot of us are talking about telling the African story. They're like, what's the African story? Because a lot of us were raised in Nairobi, we are raised in the cities, so we literally have no touch of what happened before. I don't know whose fault it is. In your opinion, what do you think happened? Why are we not in touch as much with our past? I don't know. Is it a problem with the generation? I don't know.
No. Okay. So I'll start with one thing. One, I think there's a big misconception that we are responsible for losing our own history. You know, not losing, but, you know, the kind of place where we find ourselves. And so I think miscommunication or misrepresentation arises from the fact that our history was, I want to say disrupted, but also changed course. You know, like, if you imagine like a train on the track, and then something just comes and completely shifts that train into another different direction that no one anticipated. And that's kind of colonialism, imperialism, even things like slavery. And so I do not necessarily feel that we have betrayed our past or we have done some grave thing where we do not care. I think this is a byproduct of these things happening. And at the same time that we are also evolving. I don't think culture, I think one of the things that we have to rid our minds of is that African history and African heritage, there's an authentic place where it stops. And then past that, you're not African, or it's not history, or it's not authentic enough. You know, if you're a Kamba who speaks English, you're still a Kamba. You're just a Kamba who speaks English. Like, it's not, we really have to let go of this burden that we have to conform to certain strict things in order to call ourselves authentic. Everyone evolves, even Europeans evolved. Italian culture has evolved from what it was in the 1600s. No one tells Italians that they don't have culture because, you know, they speak English. So why is the burden put on us that we have to remain in a certain place for our culture to be authentic? And so one, I think we need to give ourselves the freedom to know that we have evolved into certain directions, into new directions, just by the virtue of the course of how things have happened over time. Mm-hmm. And secondly, that it is also possible to reclaim that which you long for. Yeah. And by this, I mean things like language. I mean things like oral histories, that in as much as, yes, we're evolving, if you do feel that there's certain elements of myself or my past that I'm not connecting with, then it's okay to take an active role in that. You know, a lot of this material, we can call it lost, quote unquote, but it's not extinct.
Yeah.
And never find it anywhere else, you know. And so it still exists in different communities, in different geographies. And the challenge is, I think, that we need to equip ourselves mentally to know that we have the agency to go back and to find out what it is that we want to know. So I, as child, want to know about my family's history. I want to learn more about the Maasai language. I want to speak this language. I want to, you know, what are the things that I need to do to find this out? So one, freeing yourself from the burden of guilt that you have done some grave thing to your people. No, that's not the case. And two, allowing yourself the capacity to be an active participant in history. You know, not just learn it, but also say, there's a role I can play in it. I can ask questions, I can read, I can travel, I can speak to people, I can take, you know, videos, photographs, etc.
Yeah, thank you so much for freeing us of the guilt. Because in a way, I've always felt like, I don't know, we are either betraying ourselves or something, but thank you so much because we are evolving. It's also not our fault that we are born in this.
And you're also evolving into new cultures. Yeah. You know, we see the way sharing is kind of evolving every day. That's a culture on its own. That's how cultures evolve. It's a combination of different things, different languages, different geographies, different perspectives. So we may not see it now, but even the identity of being a Kenyan, that's not something that existed 100 years ago. Your great-grandparents did not identify as Kenyans. Kenya is a creation of the last 60, 70 years, you know.
Yeah.
So we are forming the identity of one, being a Kenyan. What does that even mean?
Yeah.
Being a Nairobian, what does that mean? So we're in the process of identity formation. And it's like you can't see it because you're inside, but you're also part of a culture that is new, that has not been seen in the world before this, you know?
Yeah. So there's something you mentioned about being an active participant in telling our own stories and taking part in conservation of our history. I'd like you to speak about that because it's something I'm also interested in. In as much as we're evolving, it's always good to always preserve something that, like, before this was all just happening. So from your experience and also from your work, maybe you can talk about maybe the work and maybe the process. How can we, how can I, how can people who are listening, how can they be active participants? What suggestions do you have?
Well, for me, I think I'm very biased towards the work that I do.
Yeah.
And I'm a digital historian. And so I look at the ways in which African history in particular is being shaped by digital technologies. And so one of the things that I like to say is that perhaps that digital technology in itself or digital tools are one of the greatest things that can happen to our capacity to understand our past. And not just understand, but also refuse what we've been told to come up with other narratives to bring in new perspectives. And so when we say active participation, it's not just a thing for museums to digitize culture. I think it's a great, great thing that with a smartphone, you're able to record something. You're able to take a photo. You're able to, participate in one way or another. So, for instance, between 2012 and 2016, I traveled across the country taking photos of the old railway stations. By old, I mean the former railway, not the SGR. And I was documenting kind of the history of the railway, but the history of Kenya as it was in a crossroads. You know, everyone was like, SGR is coming, it's brand new, and we are moving to the future. But for me, I had this discomfort that, you know, even the old railway in itself, it's not told from the perspective of Kenyans. It's told, you know, from a very imperial perspective. There were man-eating lions, so on and so forth. And so I thought, you know, this is a very important time in history. And these photos could be a very important archive for the country. And so I moved around the country slowly as a student, just taking photographs of railway stations. And I managed to travel between Mombasa and Kisumu. And take photos of over 50 stations. And so for me, that really taught me as an experience that there's so much power in your own narrative and in your own understanding of yourself. You know, I would speak to Kenyans who would say, I used to use the railway for this, or I used the railway for my honeymoon, etc. And so I'm able to get new perspectives. And so, like, documentation of history, I think, through digital means, the ability to document, the ability to share is very easy in terms of social media, etc., blogs. The infrastructure is there. I think it's the intention that sometimes people are a bit uncertain on where to start. And so I always advise, like, ask yourself, what do I want to find out? Once you've identified, okay, I want to find out more about, let's say, my family at the time of independence. That's your question. That's your theme. The next stop is to say, what are my sources? Where are my sources? And so your source could be one, your family. Your source could be archives, the National Archives, the museums. Your source could be online research, you know? And so you look at your sources, you look at your question, and then finally you ask yourself, like, where do I want to store it and how do I want to share it? Do you want it to be internal? It just lives on your computer. Do you want to create a narrative, either a vlog, a blog, an IG, a Twitter thread? And how do I want people to receive it? You know, so it is possible. I think the intention is what matters. We have been developing some guides, like oral history guides, how to digitize your collections as an individual. So we have guides for this, and I'll be happy to share the links.
So much for that, because definitely would like to really talk more on even your work and exactly the guides that can really help people. So my other question would be, in terms of impact, because, you know, like, you are a young person, you are the one who sent yourself to go document the railway. No one sent you, you know. What was going through your head at that? Because, you know, ideally, one of the common trends is, I want to, if I do something, I want to have an impact. So for you, in terms of creating an impact, what can you say about that? Because I'm trying to imagine when you're documenting, you're just doing it. Would you tell us a bit about that and how that project, the impact the project has really had? Maybe someone can be encouraged by that, because I don't want to be recording history for what? I don't know. If it's only going to be me, who knows about it? But for you, the reason why you're even here is because your work has been known and there has been some impact. Can you talk about maybe the Save the Railway project, the process that it took for you to even be here in spaces where you're speaking in platforms? You know, I don't know.
It's been a long journey. Yeah. I don't want to romanticize it. It seemed like it was easy, especially at the scale which I was trying to do it.
Yeah.
And I remember so many times people would just be like, you're just a small girl. What are you? What is your problem? Like, mbona unajipatia hii kazi yote? Like, nani amekutuma?
You know, were you in campus?
I was in campus. And I remember when I visited the first railway station, I was so naive. Because I was living in Voi. And I almost got arrested.
Yeah.
I was just like, what? Taking photos for history, and this police officer was like, "We're finding in your power. Why do you have a camera?
Yeah,
this is state problem." So I had to just be like, "Please, please, please, you can look at the photos." Then he told me, "Okay, you have to get a letter." I tried to go get letters from like the different parastatals. They were just like, "What are you doing this for?"
I know, right?
Why? And so eventually, I had to say it was a school project, which
it was not, because you're studying computer science. Then why are you?
So just like, it's a journalism project, but, you know, obviously it felt more plausible in people's minds than just wake up and decide to do this because I'm interested, which is sad because I think we also have to create an environment where people are allowed to be curious enough and structures to be able to facilitate this kind of work. So it was hard. It was not an easy journey, I think. One of the hardest parts of my career has been building legitimacy because I'm convinced internally as Chow that this work is important, but the work of trying to make that other people's perspective as well has not been easy. But I think with every project that I've done, so the railway, I did the railway first, and then I started doing work around documenting Mau Mau. I don't like calling them Mau Mau detention camps, colonial detention camps that were set up to hold Mau Mau suspects. And so I've done that as well, building on Save the Railway. And it's kind of, the impact for me has been, yes, people saying, wow, this is good. But the other side has been people saying, wow, I could do this too. Oh. So to see like being used in documentaries, in films, people are writing about it, in academic papers. So to see how the data has been used has been a big thing. to see people feel that, you know, if really Chow can do this, I think other people can.
Yeah.
Peers, my friends, etc. So the impact has been a lot on the side of one, showing that there's a different way of approaching history. We don't just have to sit and listen and consume and go, because that's how it got in school. You don't ask questions, the teacher asks questions. Mm. You have nothing to do, you're asked, you know. And so really getting rid of that mentality, especially when it comes to something as crucial as African history, given everything happened in the past to our narratives and to our stories and to our lives, our bodies, our resources, that's the one thing that we have to reclaim and we have to take part in without apologies.
Yeah, I'm really inspired by that because you mentioned something about we need to be allowed to be curious, because I'm imagining it's just you as a person and you're a student in the university. You can imagine if all of us were curious like that, how much impact would have. I don't know. Those are just some of those things you don't think about. What can you say about that and curiosity? What happened? Or I don't know.
Yeah. No, I think it's a lot of socialization and then the curriculum, you know, so you don't talk back to.
Yeah.
You don't ask teachers questions. You're not supposed to question a teacher or an adult.
Yeah.
So you just grow up thinking that my place in this world is to do what I am to consume. Mm. And so it's very tiring mentally to even exist outside a framework where you've been told you are just a consumer. I don't know. I hope CBC changes things. I don't know. I hope some people are differing. I don't know. The education system is a big part in it.
Thank you so much for even encouraging us, because I think we need to be active participants in our lives, like active participants in telling the history. And I'm really encouraged by your work, and also the fact that you're also acknowledging the fact that it wasn't easy, because it looks like, you know, you just woke up. Did you have instances of self-doubt, or what in those moments, what was really keeping you alive that makes you like, I want to do this? What was that was pushing you to do these crazy things?
Crazy.
Quote unquote. Different. What was pushing you to be different?
I want to say that it was just my internal conviction.
Okay.
It was my internal conviction. I think I just listened to myself, because I was thinking of spending the rest of my time like being a software developer for a bank. That it would not have been me. I would have done it. It would have been possible, but it wasn't. It wasn't who I was.
Yeah.
And so at that moments of self-doubt, there were many, especially thinking that I'm not seeing this being done before at this level. And so am I crazy? You know, am I actually just being too ambitious? But the thing that pulled me through was just, I think, my internal conviction and just trusting that if this is a path that has been chosen for me, I'm not going to question it.
Yeah.
I'm at peace with it. It's hard, but I would rather be doing this than anything else.
Yeah.
And so it has been kind of steps of building on each other, but I've also had a community of support, my friends, who've really always been there for me and taken me on these trips when they didn't even know what they were for.
Yeah.
My family, obviously, just where I've come from, and them being the kind of people that they are always supporting me as well. They never once told me, stop doing these crazy things, you know. And also, so community, and people who really believed in me. And I try very much to be that person to anyone who comes to me or to our organization, saying that this is something they want to do. Because I know what it's like when you don't know how to do it, but you have someone who's like, just keep going. We'll support you where we can. So community support, conviction, and just self-trust.
Thank you so much, Evan, for being courageous and just doing what it is that you felt convicted to do. I know we haven't really delved deeper into some of those discussions. Maybe we can have another podcast recording to just talk about the major project, but maybe you can just mention some of the projects and how we can get to your work. I know the Save the Rail project. What are where are the different places where we can get to interact with your work, and just so that people can be able to see?
Okay, so if you want to get to know more about my work, all the projects that I've done, you can find them on my website, www.headstronghistorian.com. Yeah. also go by the name Headstrong Historian in some spaces. And there you can find all my work. So there's a Save the Railway project. There's a Museum of British Colonialism that I mentioned earlier around the documentation of camps from the colonial period. There's a project that we've recently started on restitution of African heritage and data and mapping that. That's called Open Restitution Africa. And finally, there's African Digital Heritage, which is the organization that I run. www.africandigitalheritage.org. And so there you can find all the different projects that I have mentioned.
Yeah. And so even in as much as today's recording was a bit short, I think for me, I just say like when it all makes sense, you know, sometimes when you're recording, taking pictures of the railway and trying to document that part of history, now looking back, it's all making sense. Like certain things came up as a result of all that, because I made to understand you started off with a blog, you know, and then now it's growing to what. So I'd like you to speak about that, because I know if you allow, we're going to have another recording to just speak in detail. Speak to someone who's listening, because sometimes you do things that really do not make sense. Like even me, I've done things that honestly doesn't make sense. But sometimes when you look back, you're like, oh, now at least it's making sense. What piece of advice would you have for someone who's just in that confused state and not so sure what they're doing and they can't even articulate that?
I would say, one, if it makes sense to you, it doesn't have to make sense to other people.
Yeah.
That's the main thing. I think we look for, when we say makes sense, what we're looking for is safety.
Yeah.
We're looking for proof to be done before. We're looking for proof that other people will understand. But coming to terms with the fact that you are a unique human being. There has never been anyone like you. And therefore, the very fact that you are unique in this world means that you also have unique perspectives. And
yeah.
That's not something to be proud of. It's not something to shy away from. I think it's something to embrace. And so making sense to you internally, and you're able to kind of articulate it and visualize it for yourself before others, that's the most important thing. Because people will join you where you are. People will come to where you are. I think it's a life thing more than it is a work thing, but the boundaries and the place that you set, that's where people meet you. And so there's going to be a time where you have to accept that it may be lonely. There is a loneliness to kind of taking your own path. When you don't have very many people who understand it, but we're also living, I think, in a globalized world, you know, where you're able to connect with communities in Japan, in South America, you know, so I feel that that helps in the sense that you can have an audience that is not your family or is not your immediate geographical environment. And that's okay. You know, even if we look at the story of, what's her name? The Kenyan comedian in the US. Oh my God, I'm so embarrassed.
Female or male?
Female, the one who was doing the Instagram videos.
Oh, Nani, Elsa Majimbo, yes.
Jimbo, you know, in the fact that she had a lot of hostility.
Yeah.
From friends from the Kenyan environment, online community, but she stuck through. And if you're not her audience, you're not her audience. So trust yourself. Know that you will not necessarily appeal to everyone. But as long as you believe that the work that you're doing is important for you, it will make sense later to others.
For that encouragement and the fact that we all have a role to play to tell this history. We all have a role to play, like we can be active participants of telling our history. So maybe just in closing, do you have any encouragement for anybody who's listening? Just something they can do or something, how they can be active participants? Do you have any encouragement or any last minutes? I don't know, just anything you'd want to say.
We literally have a minute. Gosh, just believe in yourself.
Yeah.
And your story is your story. No one else's.
Yeah.
And you're the best person to tell it.
Yeah.
From perspective. That's what I can say.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Yes, thank you so much, Diana. I hope you're promising to have, we'll have an in-depth more discussion in terms of your work, but this would be good for now. Thank you so much for being an inspiration and for doing an amazing job.
Thank you.